Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Friday, March 22nd. Today, it's time to talk music again with songwriter Kevin Simpson and G. Brown, director of the Colorado Music Experience. Before we begin, thanks for listening to the Daily Sunup from the Colorado Sun. Please take a moment to rate and review us in your podcast player. Tell us what you think of the show, share your ideas, and help us reach new listeners. Thank you. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1921, Ruth Melville christened the USS Colorado with mineral water from Manitou Springs, cementing Colorado's connection to the ocean-going vessel. This battleship, launched in a New Jersey shipyard, followed two predecessors, the first from 1856, serving in the Civil War and Korean conflicts, and the second from 1903, part of Roosevelt's Great White Fleet. The third Colorado, improved with insights from World War I, launched in 1921. The Colorado served valiantly in World War II and survived Japanese kamikaze attacks in the Pacific before its 1959 decommissioning. A new nuclear submarine continued Colorado's naval legacy, launching in 2016. Before we continue, do you live near Loveland and want to join our networking event? The Colorado Sun is hosting a free networking evening in partnership with the Loveland Arts Creative District and Artworks Center for Contemporary Art on March 27th. RSVP today. Space is limited. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click the Loveland event button. We hope to see you there. Next, our feature story.
Welcome to another Friday, listeners, and in case you hadn't noticed, we're in the early stages of March Madness, so we've pulled out Basketball Jones for the intro today. Now, you may ask, what does college basketball have to do with music? Well, in a few minutes, we're going to hear about that from my friend G. Brown, director of the Colorado Music Experience at colomusic.org. How's it going, G?
Things are good, Kevin. In terms of things that tickle your funny bone, Basketball Jones is still in the top 100 for me.
Well, I had forgotten who did it. I mean, I remembered the song, and I'm like, oh, yeah, who was...
Cheech and Chong classic.
It was hysterical. Yeah. Who knew? Okay. Well, before we get to hoops, G, we mentioned a few weeks ago, actually maybe a couple months ago, that a Grateful Dead symposium was on the calendar, although it was still in the planning stages at the time. And now there are more details about just what this is going to look like. And it sounds like something pretty special. What more can you tell us about it?
Well, we've set the date and we're doing it. So I guess I can tell you everything about it. the genesis of this was intersecting with the folks at Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus. They were looking to find more contemporary programming, and I was introduced by a dear old friend, Charlie Tombazian, who was the original director at Fisk back in town. And a few things came together. I wanted to do something unique and cool as far as a fundraising event for Colorado Music Experience, and we landed on the Grateful Dead. They performed four times in Boulder over their arc. They played twice at Folsom Stadium, famously. They played at the CU Events Center once in 1981. But their very first show was back in 1969, one of the first times they had ventured out of the Haight-Ashbury district. And they played the UMC Ballroom up at CU. And the guys who did the light show, the psychedelic light show, I've remained friends with them over the decades, and they are going to recreate what they used to do back then. You've seen the footage, I'm sure, Kevin, of the drone show that Dead and Company did last summer on their tour.
Oh, right. That was amazing. Well,
yeah, it's like the 4th of July stuff now in lieu of fireworks, but just incredible engineering. Now they're going to play the Sphere in Las Vegas and you see the Skull and Roses logo on that ginormous LED screen. But how did we get there, right? We want to go back to 1969 when these guys literally stole the clock faces off the UMC walls to put their oil and water into to project up on a bed sheet behind the stage. It's just really remarkable. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of work to track down analog gear, old overhead projectors, carousel slide projectors, Kevin. You and I know what these things are because we're crusty old guys, but
they're really reproducing it the old way. They're going back to roots.
But in real time, everyone's idea was, well, hey, what if something goes wrong? So, well, that's the point. That's what we used to do back then, is totally free form. But really brilliant people put that stuff together back in the day. I mean, they were not only visionaries, they were trying to do what they could with what was state of the art at the time. And so we tracked down the gear, and the guys are just thrilled to be doing it. That is the musical component, or I'm sorry, the visual component of what the Dead used to do. We also want to explore their musical improvisations. So we will also have a panel of David Gans, the leading Grateful Dead scholar and authority, hosts the Grateful Dead Hour and Tales from the Golden Road on Sirius Radio, done all the books on them. Dave's coming in town. He's a dear old friend. He'll deconstruct things with the help of Michael Cebulski, who's with the CU College of Music, getting the university's involvement. He's another Dead scholar. And Kenny Passarelli, you might know that name. He might be
the first musician
to come out of Colorado, having played with Joe Walsh and Hall & Oates and Dan Fogelberg and Stephen Stills, everybody up at Caribou Ranch in the 70s. Well, Kenny's first band was Conal Implosion, which don't even think of using the name, Kevin. It's been trademarked, okay? But Conal Implosion opened for the Dead at the 1969 show. Kenny just in high school. And we're going to have to coach him up a little bit. I don't think he remembers very much about it, to be honest. But that's just a mark of authenticity, as far as I'm concerned, right? So anyway, we're just trying to coalesce this into a informative and entertaining symposium on the Dead's, Grateful Dead's presence in Boulder back in the day. And tickets are now on sale. You can go to the website. They're modestly priced. It was important to us. But for everyone to see those archival assets of the original light show and play a little jamming music to accompany it, I think it's going to be a great night. Two shows, 6:30 and 9 o'clock on April 26th. That's a Friday night at Fisk Planetarium in Boulder.
Wow, sounds like an event. You know, I love some of the YouTube channels that deconstruct music. I'm sure you've seen some of those. There's a number of them out there now. But whether it's a single song that gets deconstructed or the catalog of an artist or whatever, is that kind of what we're going to see here with this? Are they going to go deep into the technical nuances of the Dead's improvisations?
I hope we can hit on both to whatever degree, Kevin. Time constraints, but we're in good hands with David Gans, Michael Cebulski. They'll deconstruct that stuff. I don't want this set in stone yet, but we're pointing on deconstructing Dark Star, legendary Dead tune on the Live Dead album. The version there has to approximate what the Dead played in Boulder, because that was the same tour leading up to that recording. So, we'll try and tear that one apart.
All right. So, folks, if you're into the Dead, and maybe we're even in the audience for one of those original Boulder shows, this might be something for you to check out. So, what would be a good clip to put folks in the mood?
Let's try that Dark Star. It's classic.
Absolutely. Here we go. Grateful Dead, Dark Star.
Dark Star, catch you. Oh, it's
All right. So as we said earlier, it's that crazy time of year when it seems like nearly everyone is filling out brackets for March Madness, whether you're a staunch hoops fan or not. And, you know, the NCAA women's tournament has really been attracting a big following the last several years. Folks have probably heard about Caitlin Clark, the sharpshooter from University of Iowa, who might be the most celebrated pure basketball player in the women's game right now. But there's another program, too, that's been in the upper echelon the last few years, and that's Louisiana State University, LSU. And this is where we find that intersection between sports and music, which you learned more about thanks to a Colorado connection with the LSU program, G. Tell us about Floje Johnson.
Floje is a guard for the LSU Lady Tigers, a standout player, and LSU, the defending national champions, people might remember. So I've always tried to celebrate the intersections between sports and music. So we're in preparation for March Madness. I was over at my friend Jim Kavar's house. Jim, a member of the Kavar family, they owned the Sink and Tulagi up in Boulder back in the 60s and 70s, ground zero for the live music scene in Boulder. So that's been our lifelong connection. And Jim's son, Grant, is currently the assistant communications director for LSU's women's basketball. We're really proud of him. It was pretty great as his avuncular presence in his life to see him cutting down the nets last year and going to the White House with the team. So really proud of Grant. Anyway, we were watching some women's basketball, and it came up about Floje's story. She's the daughter of Camouflage. He was a rapper back in the day. Jason Johnson, his real name, came from Savannah, Georgia, kind of an underground presence in the rap scene, based out of New Orleans when he was recording. 20 years old, he was looking to expand his regional following with Strictly Florida Streets, his major label debut album in 2001. He took on the moniker Camouflage because he said, when he gets on the mic, nobody knows how I'm going to flow. Each of my rhymes is disguised. Anyway, the sad story, Camouflage was shot and killed months before Floje was born. And Grant clued us into this story. I guess Camouflage came up with Floje's name. The same week he was shot, he told her mom, who was pregnant with her, that they should name her Floje, and she said, hell no, I'm not naming my baby that. And then he was murdered, and she stuck with the name because she felt that was the only decision that he'd be able to make in her life at that point. So, us being us at the Colorado Music Experience, I went back into our archives and managed to find the original press kit and photo of Camouflage, got it down to Grant, and he presented it to her this past week. And I don't know that it's a rarity, but she had never seen it. I know there aren't that many of them laying around. And turns out she does not have that much about her father that she's accrued over her life. So Grant reports she was just totally blown away, and it just felt good to do something nice for someone, give her some information about the father she never knew.
Well, and so significantly, too, I mean, the apple did not fall far from the tree here. She is kind of a budding artist of her own, right?
That's true. She is a very accomplished rapper and accompanies a lot of the team's videos with her basketball exploits. When video clips are released, they use that for the soundtrack. So, yeah, she could. It'll be interesting to see where her talent takes her on or off the court.
All right. So let's complete a three-point play here with a cliff. Do we go with father or daughter here?
I think we go daughter. Let's hear what skills with a Z that Flo J has.
Okay. Let's pause here for a sec. I wasn't able to get that off of the...
The Twitter thing?
Yeah. So I did find one called Perfect Timing. Do you want to just...
Yeah, anything. She has not had official releases, I don't think, you know.
Oh, okay.
As far as with a major label or anything like that, it's she's just done it in interviews and performances. She's been on TV a ton. You might be able to find those. She was on some, you know, singing competition shows or whatever a couple years ago. So anything you find, I think, is...
Well, we're fortunate enough to have a clip from Flo J. It's a piece called Perfect Timing. And it is kind of perfect timing for March Madness. So here we go. I won't quit because I'm on my way. Yeah. And I know my day finna come, so I'm just timing it out. I just keep my head on and I'm just grinding it out. I know what I'm about, but really they just finding it out. What come with the rain, the same thing gonna come with the drought. I'm playing the game, no sleeping, got me twisting and turning. I'm living, I'm learning, feel like I've been preaching a sermon. And I thank God, yeah, cause he lead me in the dark, yeah. Okay, G, this next segment, we're going to talk about a band that has really stood the test of time. I remember hearing about Chris Daniels and the Kings shortly after I first arrived in Denver in the early 80s, and they're still going strong. For folks not familiar with the band, there's a great reported profile, as you do so often, on the Colorado Music Experience website that delves way back into Chris Daniels' early days, which makes for a fascinating story. What should folks who somehow may have missed Chris Daniels and the Kings know about this group that's, you know, been around so long and continues to entertain audiences here?
Yeah, great respect for Chris. He's been a lifer. He would qualify as a Colorado music legend. First came to town back in the 70s and played in a band called Magic Music, which might have been the first jam band. Now the Colorado is the jam band headquarters large degree. You got to trace the roots back to those guys living in a school bus up in Allen's Park in the mountains back in the day. The Kings formulated 50 years ago this year, 1984, at a club called the Blue Note in Boulder. I think Chris had in mind just doing a one-shot performing with a horn band, getting a horn section to amplify his music. And here we are, five decades later. They're still doing it. There have been various incarnations of the Kings over the years, but always fronted by Chris, doing that R&B-based soul thing that he does so well. I have seen Chris in pretty much every iteration, and sometimes there's a lot of people in the room. You know, he's famously played all the great street fairs and concerts in the area. Sometimes a little club where word didn't get out, and there's a handful of people there, and has never mailed it in. Gives it his all every time out, and that's a mark of greatness. I also like to point out that his greatest skill, not only as a musician, but as a band leader, to keep talented musicians in line with everything it takes to keep a band together and working, is a remarkable accomplishment. So hats off to Chris and the Kings. They're going to be playing the Boulder Theater April 4th, so it's great to be able to give a little heads up about that. It'll be worth seeing Fred Gowdy, the legendary vocalist from the Freddie Hinchey Band back in the 70s, has been performing with Chris and the Kings lately, so he will be at the show, and some special guests that I'm loath to reveal. That's Chris's job, but boy, they're nationally renowned entertainers. They're going to come in for this celebration, so you'll see us there on April 4th, Boulder Theater.
Well, you know, one of the things in the profile that jumped out at me that I thought was so cool was Chris's recollection of the Boulder music scene back in the day when a handful of regular bands would all be playing at the same time or on the same nights in Boulder, and they would actually schedule their breaks so they could go and listen or sit in with the other bands at the other places. That is just the coolest thing. Were you ever a witness to that? Did you see that?
Oh, sure. Clubs like the Walrus and stuff in Boulder. That's when I was going to school up there and working up there. And it was, I've always had a tinge of regret. You know, we do things a little differently out here in the West compared to the major music markets, right? I always thought that people wonder why the scene didn't explode back in the day. And I'm sad to report, it was kind of like some jealousies in a lot of camps, you know? Huh. Usually when a band had some success, you'd like to think that that was good for everybody, that that meant people would investigate other things going on in the scene. And that is kind of the case now. But really, it was at certain times, just this backbiting, you know? Well, why not me? You know, people were jealous of someone else's success. So point being, the scene that Chris describes in Boulder in the 70s was really special, you know, that those guys all were part of a club, a scene, you know, and trying to develop it. And anything good that happened to any of them was good for all of them in their minds. And that's the way I always thought it should work.
Well, you know, another thing that's mentioned in the profile is the band's overseas success. And you hear that sometimes that a group will go to Europe or wherever, South America, who knows, but they'll find success there for whatever reason. What accounts for Chris Daniels and the Kings, their appeal in Europe in particular? They found some success there as well.
In the 80s, they had a gentleman who was smitten with the band's music. He'd heard it somehow and booked them for a tour and brought them over to Europe. And they set it on fire. It's interesting how certain indigenous music forms here in America are more appreciated in foreign markets than they are here in the homeland, right? I mean, right. Blues and jazz in general that way. An artist like Otis Taylor, I would cite, is someone who suffers from that syndrome, right? A star over in Europe and trying to find work over here is a totally different challenge. So that's what set what lit the fuse for Chris and the Kings going over on that first tour, and have played repeatedly, played big festivals over in Europe, played for royalty. It's just been a nice subset to their career that sustained them that people here in their hometown probably don't know that much about.
Well, again, Chris Daniels and the Kings playing the Boulder Theater on April 4th. So we can get back to March Madness. There's probably some games going on as we speak. What's a good tune of Chris Daniels and the Kings that could play us into the weekend, G?
Well, one of their career highlights back in the early 80s, when the adult alternative radio format was burgeoning, when KBCO here locally was an independently, locally owned and operated station, and they started playing deeper tracks, not the stuff you're hearing on Top 40 or the hard rock, classic rock stuff, but stuff a little more attuned to adult listeners. And in that nascent format, Chris had a hit. The title track from an album called When You're Cool went big on those Pacific Airplay charts, number one in the Minneapolis market with the station out there. So it's fun to revisit it, When You're Cool.
All right, here we go.
When you're cool, the sun shines all the time. You can shuffle right through that rainstorm. Don't you pay it, no, never mind. It's got a lot to do with the attitude of leaving the blues behind. When you're cool, the sun shines all the time.
Well, thanks for joining us, folks. And remember, if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review on whatever platform you use to tune in. And G, have a great weekend. We'll see you next month.
All right, Kevin. Look forward to it, as always.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The Colorado Medicaid program says it is moving to address delays and erroneous terminations of health benefits that have taken coverage from people with disabilities. A recent memo to Medicaid recipients lays out steps to stabilize a program that provides in-home caregivers for people with chronic conditions and severe disabilities. The move comes after the state was accused of discriminating against people with disabilities who say they have been kicked off Medicaid because of documentation issues, even when they've repeatedly submitted the required documents. The Colorado Center on Law and Policy and the National Health Law Program filed a complaint against Medicaid last month over the coverage delays. A gravel pit owner in Fairplay has pulled his application for a new asphalt plant at the aggregate mine, citing threats and harassment to his workers. Park County planners also said they were being harassed over the proposal. A county spokesperson applauded the move, saying the proposed asphalt plant had stirred up community concerns. Gravel miners and contractors in charge of providing concrete and asphalt are facing stiff opposition across Colorado amid concerns over environmental impacts and noise. The opposition comes as Colorado collects more than $4 billion in federal dollars to improve roads requiring gravel. Leading Colorado environmental groups are pushing for three proposed ballot measures aimed at limiting the oil and gas industry in the state. If approved for the ballot, those measures could end up running against as many as 10 competing proposals supported by oil interests, though it's not clear yet whether any will end up on the ballot. The dueling efforts are a reminder of past political battles over oil and gas policies in 2018, 2020, and 2022. Governor Jared Polis has encouraged both sides to stand down. He has said in the past he wants to give existing oil and gas pollution limits time to work. Polis signed a regulatory overhaul of oil and gas policies into law in 2019. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
This is Michael Booth.
And this is John Ingold. We cover health and climate here at the Colorado Sun.
Every week, John and I work together to send out a newsletter to our premium members called The Temperature.
In this newsletter, we share our latest reporting about health and climate and how they intersect, issues like forever chemicals, healthcare's rising costs, and the lingering effects of the pandemic. The Temperature is one of our weekly newsletters available to members at the premium level.
To sign up, head to coloradosun.com/join. Not only will you be able to sign up for The Temperature and our other premium newsletters, but you'll be supporting the Colorado Sun as a member, and thanks for doing that.